to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Did you need music behind that?
No.
Oh, okay.
No music required.
It kind of sounded like you might need music. Let's see. I have to turn you down. You're kind of loud.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. So, here we are on November the 3rd. Got to make sure we stress the date, because we're either going to be happier or sadder after Tuesday. Preferably happier. That's the team we're playing for, is the happier team, the one that does not bite babies or cackle.
I think it's time for everybody to get their riot gear out, because no matter who wins, it's going to be required.
I did have somebody text me. It said that their neighbor across the street usually puts out political signs, but didn't this round, but did paint their address on the curb with a blue background.
Oh.
And it's like,
what about the sandbags?
Is
Why'd
that
they
a
put
thing?
Those sandbag walls out? I don't understand that.
I don't know. Yeah. The world's gone mad. So we're going to have a good time today, but we're going to talk about serious stuff. And at the end of the day, bottom line is, if you don't vote...
you're a knucklehead.
Yes, there's that. That's a really nice way of putting it. Bill, you're in charge of describing the people who do not vote.
I've been studying
I have nothing nice to say.
Yeah.
But honestly, if you don't vote and you care about the Constitution, that's your access point. So,
that's
you gotta
right.
do it. And I realize there are issues. We're going to talk about some
and
of those today.
Your vote does count.
Yeah, and there's a ton of down ballot stuff. So if you're still trying to figure out... school board, and you're trying to figure out propositions if you live in one of those states, and you're trying to sort all that stuff out, look on your, call smart people that you know, or look on your local maybe a Republican committee or your state committee. You can look on your Democratic committee, but that wouldn't be the one I'd recommend, but they do exist. So anyway, I would double check with them before you read through the whole thing and get yourself all wound around the axle. But please don't abdicate because you go, well, they're already going to call the presidential election. My vote doesn't matter, and I'm just not going to do it. You have to understand that regardless of the presidency, the House and the Senate are super important. Your whether you're an assembly and a Senate or a House and a Senate at the state level, they make a ton of rules that affect you, and they are the only thing standing between you and the bureaucracy that will come and crush you. Take away out here, you know, take away your water, make you focus on nothing but fish, whatever it is they're up to. But you've got to play that card.
Yep. Don't forget about your school boards.
School boards, it's all super, super important. So it isn't, we get sometimes really focused on the presidential election, forget about all the rest of the stuff. And that's how we wind up with bad people in office. And for those of you that are still thinking term limits are excellent, just want to remind you, we have them. We call them elections. So term limits are coming on Tuesday. And you have right. access to term limits on Tuesday. So go and do that. And if you still really think term limits are super smart, you should look at California, because it's been really good here.
Yeah, it's really worked
yeah,
out.
It's really, really helped us here a lot.
You get new dummies every couple of years.
Well, everybody's changing seats all the time. Nobody's there long enough to learn anything. So, that said, today we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki, and we also have Doug Logan, who is the founder and CEO of Cyber Ninjas, the former founder. I don't know what you say with that, but anyway, he holds a specialty in application security. So bottom line is, everything Doug knows, we know nothing about. We'll just like confess that. We're just going to confess that at the outset. So everything Doug tells you is what Doug knows, and so we're kind of excited, because this is cybersecurity. I just got a letter the other day. I just opened it yesterday, that said, oh, by the way, like, what was it, my medical insurance? I lose track now. Is it the bank, the medical insurance, the House of Representatives? Who is it that gave away all my information? This time I think it was medical. They gave it all away. So in case you want to know, you know, what kind of allergies I have, it's basically everything but plastic, metal, and glass. So don't bother to break into my medical records. Doug's the founder and CEO of Cyber Ninjas, the organization retained by the state of Arizona to direct and coordinate all aspects of the forensic audit in Maricopa County. We did some shows about this, and you can look back through our archives for those in case we forget to tell you that. But they were reviewing ballots, machines, and all the related materials associated with the election of 2020. The forensic audit was the first of its kind in the nation. That is a super important point. It hadn't been done before, and they were kind of skating out on the uncharted thin ice of the pond. Mr. Logan was an expert witness in the Atrium, Michigan election case, aiding in several additional legal cases related to the 2020 election. These undertakings were the first of their kind in the nation, which is a critical dimension, as there were no rule books or formulas to follow. Soon, Doug will be releasing a book regarding his work in these matters, paying particular attention to the Maricopa County, Arizona forensic audit. Doug is wonderfully married to a wife who has... It's always good. I'm sure she has a name. We just don't know what it is. Dr. Lyle. Dr. Lyle's got that one under seal. Sorry, Doug. I didn't know how to get a hold of you. And, you know, Lyle kind of shivved you here on the bio. So you have a wife who stood by him through all the tests, criticisms, and attacks on his revealing the myriads of faults, errors, and compromises associated with the 2020 election. And I'm sure you've probably burned some toast or committed some other crimes. Oh, my God. And then, well, of course, Dr. Lyle Rapacki. Well, that's the other guy you're going to hear, of course. And you've heard from him before. We usually, you know, we talked about it so many times, we never really did it. But we decided it would be super fun to do a show about nothing.
Yeah.
Kind of a Seinfeldian show, and we decided, no, we'll just weave that into the other programs we do. He's a private sector intelligence behavior analysis, and he still comes on with us, and threat assessment specialist. Since June of 2010, he has provided select members of the Arizona legislature intelligence briefings on border security and threats to Arizona sovereignty. He also receives, analyzes, and disseminates critical intelligence from and to law enforcement, intelligence, and governmental communities. He's the author of dozens of white pages, bulletins, and briefings, many of which have received distribution to and by local, state, federal law enforcement. But, you know, I'm going to change Lyle's bio here, because the one thing Lyle doesn't have is that whole time change thing. The whole time change.
We weren't going to mention a little bit of a deficiency.
We had a conversation every time we do a show, because see, he's in Arizona and we're in California, and then we have to call each other. What time is it where you are? Okay, what time is it where you are? So we did this last week, and then it's like, are you kidding me? They're going to change the time on Sunday morning? Brutal. So I called him yesterday. It took 18 minutes to sort out what time it was going to be. So Doug, as a cybersecurity expert, I would really like you to write some sort of program, if that's within your grasp, to give to your friend Lyle so that he can know what time it is.
Yikes. Doug, I hope Lyle kind of forewarned you about my co-host. I'll try to control it a little bit. But
Doug's wife and Bill's wife are both probably problems.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I am Bill's wife.
Oh, that's right.
But I don't burn toast because I don't go in the kitchen. That's not allowed. That's not my area.
No. I walked in the house one day and I smelled like something nutty cooking, and I thought, oh my
god. Like popcorn.
She really did
the movies.
She's like, cooking. That's amazing. I walked in and go, oh, what are you cooking? She goes, oh, I forgot. And I walk in. She was cooking rice like 3 hours before, and it was it was this black substance in the bottom of a pot.
It smelled really good, though.
Yeah, it had a different smell, that's for sure.
It went beyond the burn into the popcorn smell. Yeah.
Yeah,
it wasn't good. Anyway,
not a cook. Not
yeah,
a cook.
Failure there. So where would you fellers like to start with this this morass?
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of responses. First of all, it was not 15. And secondly, you were just as confused as I was all the time. We couldn't figure out California versus Arizona versus Florida, because I said I called Doug before we get on the show. And what's his It was a pretty intense conversation, Bill.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
The wheels came off when it was, what time will it be for Doug? And I said, well, it'll be 12 for me and 3 for him. And he goes, what about the time change? I'm like, the only person here who really actually has a problem is your time, because you guys don't play ball with the rest of us.
Exactly.
That's really hard. Funny every time, though. We never get sick of it. Oh, my goodness.
I don't think Lyle would use the program if I created one for him, though. I don't think he would use it.
Oh, I forgot about that. You're going to have to do, like, the implant thing. We're going to have to go full, into the future thing and just, sneak up on him and get him an implant.
Just ad-lib. You'll make it. You'll be a little early or a little late. You know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, but he was conferencing in, Doug. That's what we cared about. All right, Doug.
I should have just called him, and then I could have called you. And
there you go.
It would have been very simple.
Well,
not a problem at all.
Since this miracle has actually taken place, where would you like to start with all of this?
Well, I'd like to have my attorney now on the phone with all of this, because I'm being maligned. This is unbelievable. The whole nation knows I don't know how to do cyber. I don't make it a secret. Everybody knows. Not technical. All right, I feel better.
We'll just call you Analog Lyle.
Before you get to the serious side with Doug Logan, who's, like, really nationally known and, like, important. Bill, having some issues with Pape machinery. I don't know what's going on out there, but there's taking place, and I have to tell you, it's impacted much the drive big machine.
Well, there are some big changes going on there, and... And I'll not get into that on this show. Maybe in a couple of weeks I'll give you a heads up on what's happening there. But long story short, I think the tractor rides have come to an end.
Well, and if hey, it's been sponsor of your show for how many years have I been on and off? Well,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, remember it was Kubota tractor before that, so we have that terrific Photoshop of you riding along on the tractor.
Get into all that. You're right. That was a great Photoshop. People all over saw me drive a big, huge tractor, and I did replace the light pole that got in the way of the tractor.
You did.
Wait, Lyle, was that the time you ran over my iPad?
Doug, I don't want to get into the details.
All day.
Oh, there's more.
Well, we know he didn't run over his own iPad.
Ow.
Oh, sorry. Comes with the free shipping.
That was a shot there. Okay.
Oh. Yeah, we're going to talk about cybersecurity at some point. Oh, my goodness. Well,
speaking of cybersecurity and iPads, I once did a phishing exercise against an organization where I promised free iPads to those who clicked on the link. And then, of course, we had to do security awareness training with anyone who clicked on the link because they weren't supposed to click on the link. But me, being a man of my word, I brought iPads straight from CVS. The ones when you hurt your eye, go over your eye, and I gave an iPad to everyone who had to go to that class.
Wow.
Okay, that's really fun. Bill's work does that. They send him like fake emails that they're not supposed to answer, and then when they answer them, they have to go to like remedial cyberness.
Yeah, we have to do cyber classes. You know, they'll send you an email, and if you're in a hurry, and you look at it, oh, I better answer this, and you. Yeah, you're going to class. It's like, oh,
yeah. Well, I do all those exercises. I taught the class, but now they can either people say, well, you know, if you'd clicked on the link, you also would have gotten an iPad. But because you didn't, I'm the only one who got an iPad.
Wow.
Nice. Oh, my goodness. Well, we have now goofed off enough that we have to take a break. Sorry, Doug, we forgot to tell you. They're kind of something about Lyle. I don't know, you know, comes on and it's just all this goofing off, makes us all feel really silly.
I thought that would all go away when he gave him that $1.85 raise.
Yeah, apparently. Thank God we never sent him the Maker's Mark. We never get anything done.
Yeah.
but we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us. Maybe I shouldn't tell you, but you can. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Okay, thanks, Aaron.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for a dime. His sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called a doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, do you believe this bellyache? I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor,
it'll cure your time change.
Lime in something, but I don't think it was a coconut.
I couldn't resist. All right, Doug, before we get off on some other tangent, take us into the land of cybersecurity, if you dare.
Let's see, where to get started? I assume we're mostly interested in voting machines, correct?
Well, you know, I guess that... But when people hear cybersecurity, they're thinking, what, their PC, the company, their bank records?
Well, what exactly? Email.
Oh, email. Do you work on all that kind of stuff?
No, not everything. So cybersecurity is a general term, which means making computers secure. And so it's basically like advanced IT on the security focus. And so I specifically work in the area of application security. And that means that I work with people who are developing applications to make sure they do it in a manner so it can't be compromised and you can't lose all your data over and over again. So in my history, I've done a lot of what they call penetration testing, which is where you attack it like a bad guy, find the vulnerabilities, and then tell them how to fix it. And now I manage a team that does security engineering and does mobile work, and working with mobile developers to build it well.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Still sounds like it's out of our reach, but okay. So as it relates to how did you get involved in the? I guess I'm kind of curious. How did you even wind up dealing with the election security stuff?
Yeah, so that's actually an interesting story. So it was after the 2020 election, and like everybody, I was reading these non-mainstream media articles. They were talking about things that were off in the election, and I had a friend of mine. And I kept sending these articles to her that I found, and she was sending things back to me. And she finally reached out to me and said, hey, Doug, if I figure out who it is who's working on this, will you get to the bottom of this? Because, I trust your cybersecurity abilities. And I said, sure. Thinking at that point in time that, maybe I'd spend a week or two diving into things. anyway, about a week later, she called me back. She connected me with someone who connected me with someone who was on their way to Lynn Wood's house. And I spent the better part of 2-3 months at Lynn Wood's plantation with the other group of patriots, with Sidney Powell and General Flynn and a whole bunch of other people, just diving into what happened and trying to legally get forensic images of these voting systems so we could take a closer look to see how they functioned and what might have happened, if anything.
The thing it exploded. I mean, it just turned into a huge, it was everywhere.
It was everywhere, and as it turned out, I was kind of connected because of that involvement. I had met a lot of people, and I actually got a call from the Arizona Senate asking me to put together a proposal. So I put together a proposal. I tried to think about, if I was going to try to manipulate an election, what would I change and at what stage and therefore, how would I detect it? And then how would I prove that I actually detected something? So basically, all the information I needed to get in order to figure out if anything happened. And we put together, you know, that from a high level, we call that kind of threat modeling. And from that, I put together a proposal that was submitted to the Arizona Senate. And I understand they looked at about 12 companies or so. Ours was the most comprehensive proposed audit, and so they ended up choosing it, and we got the contract.
So are you giving us a hint, Lyle?
Right. No, he's absolutely right.
I thought maybe you wanted to jump in.
No, I'm clearing my throat.
Well, I know, but that's a universal sign if I want to jump in.
Yeah. Kimmy Lyle always wants to talk. He's ready to go.
What? Oh my God, Doug, I'm glad you're here. We had no idea that was happening.
Oh. I brought him on. I'm telling you, folks, this is unbelievable. Wow. Hey, Doug, I think didn't you come to Arizona also and meet with Senate and House leadership?
Yeah, we did. After we submitted the proposal, I was traveling to Arizona, and they asked me to come give it in person. And so that was a little bit of a crazy story, if you want to hear a little bit crazy story. So as you may have remembered, after COVID, there weren't a lot of rental cars, and there weren't a lot of people driving Lyft and Uber. So I ended up being late to my meeting with the Senate, and the only Lyft vehicle that came and picked me up had a cracked windshield and had a back window that was partially open. So you need to understand, like, I've had zero political involvement in my life. I've never been to a rally. I haven't put a yard sign in my front. Like, I don't, like, zero political environment. So I'm on my way to do a presentation for the Arizona Senate, and I'm riding in a dilapidated vehicle, and it's 9,000 degrees outside. And the windshield is smashed, and the back window is not left open. And I'm arriving probably about 10 minutes later when I was supposed to. So I texted a Senator Fan. I told her I was arriving late. It was not a problem. And me, you know, I was a little bit nervous. And so I don't know your faith, but, you know, I prayed. And, like, I felt like the Lord just answered my prayer. And he said, look, Doug, they're just people. And I had immediate peace that only comes from the Lord. Walked into that meeting, and it was like it was orchestrated. You know, there was about 12 people in that room, and I just answered question after question after question of how we go about it. I was very transparent on how the funding was going to work in everything, and answered all their questions. And it was walked out of that, you know, with total peace, and excited to look for the opportunity.
And they were at that time because, I mean, you know, obviously it was 2020 and we've slept since then. What exactly were they looking for at the outset? Because that kind of changed over time, right? As we all learned more about what was going on in 2020?
I think that, you know, the Arizona Senate, and Lyle can talk a lot more on this, was under a tremendous amount of pressure from the constituents to do something. But there was so much political pressure that that was put over the whole election integrity stuff. As you saw then, and you continue to see now, where if anyone spoke up and thinks that anything might have happened wrong with that election, they're immediately ostracized and the conspiracy theorists and all this other crazy stuff that we've seen. So the politicians both really had to do something because the people who voted them in wanted them to. And on the same note, most of them didn't really want to do much of anything. And there was a handful where that wasn't the case. They actually wanted to do something. And Lyle can give details for sure.
I mean, Doug's making an extremely good point that is maybe lost now because it's been 3 years. But when the election of 2020 went sideways because of fraud, it was Mark Finchem, Representative Finchem, who went to leadership and asked to have a legislative hearing on this prior to the state of Arizona certifying the election, and he was denied. And there were discussions as to why, how come, and basically he got nowhere. They did not want to discuss it, and there was nothing here to see move on. What Representative, but then Representative Finchem, because he just won the primary for the state senate in Yavapai County, where I live in Prescott. He called me. I think it was November 8th or 9th, so the election was November 5th. About 3 or 4 days later, he calls me and says, "I want you to coordinate a joint legislative hearing that's going to be off campus, off the Capitol grounds." Off the Capitol grounds. And I said, "Why? How come? What's going on?" We went through it all, and he turned me loose, and he went in another direction to prepare. And that's when I began to be briefed by the Mayor Giuliani and his team, and President Trump and his team, in preparation for the hearing. Now, I say all this because on November 30th of 2020, we had an all-day hearing in Phoenix. It was about a 10-hour day. And I had national media, not the propaganda platforms, but I had conservative, Breitbart, all of them. I go down the list. Bannon. Excuse me, guys. Just all the different news channels that were conservative and balanced. There were about 10, 8 to 10. And I included them so they could cover it live. And it was covered live all day nationally. That was a turning point that led to Doug responding to the Senate request for somebody to do an audit. They did not want to do it. I won't get into particulars. I cannot at this time still, even though it's been 3 years. But there were leaders, like Doug just mentioned, there were leaders in the Senate and definitely in the House also that wanted nothing to do with this and actually fought to have it come about. But through some perseverance, some phone calls by President Trump, interestingly enough, by the Vice President Pence, who later did not stand up and do what he should have done, in my opinion, by Mayor Giuliani, to the leadership of both the Arizona House and the Senate, as Doug might agree, there was, if you will, a lobbying among some senators. They agreed to do a forensic audit, and to which Doug was referencing. This had never been done before in the history of the nation, so this was all brand new territory. Doug goes to this meeting. He and the ninjas are retained, and Doug, you can fill in the details, but he was then tasked to put together a forensic audit and get it going. And that's a whole story in and of itself, I would think. Wouldn't you, Doug?
It's a rather long story. In fact, it's long enough it could make it into a book.
Hey, what a good idea.
Doug, go on, Logan. What's the book? Come on.
Yeah, what's
it called? So I am in the process of writing a book in order to document all of this because, you know, honestly, when people ask me questions, oftentimes, you know, I'll be hanging out with friends, asking these questions, and I'll be talking for hours about it, and they're like, "Doug, this is super interesting. The rest of people need to learn about this." And also specifically, I was kind of getting to the place because, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, when I took on that audit, my name is smeared across the country. To this day, there continues to be things that accuse me of being a criminal. I've been pulled into grand juries. I've been learning the lawsuits, you know, all this other crazy stuff. And I kind of wanted to get a representation of what had happened on my own in a book. So if for nothing else, I can give it to my kids and be like, "This is what really happened." And what I just, you know, I've got 12 kids. I love my kids. They're awesome. My
you
oldest
have 12
is 21
kids.
Now. My, yes.
Well, you kind of buried the lead there with the wife. Good grief. She needs better billing, Lyle. What the heck?
No, she's a good girl. Hey, Aaron, I'm telling you, she's a good girl.
Apparently.
Oh, no, she is.
She's a machine.
Doug won't. No comment. Doug won't talk about this, but she has stood by him. She encouraged him all through it. For the record, and Doug can correct me anywhere, of course, he was the director of the forensic audit. Everything went to his desk. I had no official role whatsoever. I had no official role. Now that I say that, I was fortunate to do what I have done for 18 years, politically, to put out fires, handle controversies away from the whole thing, and make it all go away. Now, I say that because I remember one night, Doug, you correct me. I remember one night we met, you asked me to come down. I was in Prescott. Asked me to come back down to Phoenix. I'd been back and forth two or three times. I arranged for a hotel for the key people on the forensic team, and we had rooms standing there. I had a room waiting for me any time because I could come down in a moment's notice if I was called. And I came down. I dealt with the problems, and then Doug and I met that night at, I think it was 10:30. Wasn't it, Doug? 10:35. And we went up to a Denny's.
We don't know if we can take your word for that, Lyle. We'll have to double check that.
Wow. We did meet at 10:30. The reason we met at 10:30 is because that's how long the audit days were. You know, about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Great.
I left there around 10 p.m. Yeah. 6 days a week for that entire time. And so 10:30 was the time that I reliably could get back from it and go and meet with Lyle.
Right.
It was really up the street from the hotel. It was an IHOP, if I remember, Doug. It wasn't Denny's. It was IHOP. And nobody was in there because it was partly COVID, partly it was late at night. And we sat way away from everybody so we could see if anybody was coming in. And we talked about problems and crises and decisions and all that. And the reason I'm telling you the story, because Doug won't. Doug, you correct me.
I will.
look at the time.
It was an hour and 15, 20-minute discussion of all the crises. And you know what I'm talking about, Doug. I won't mention, but political and individuals sabotaging, et cetera, et cetera. When we were all
done. In politics? You had people sabotaging you? That's shocking. It hardly ever happens.
Read his book.
I mean, just to give a little bit of a backdrop for this to make this make even more sense. So when we started the audit in the very beginning, there was a newspaper article that came out that Mark Elias had hired 70 attorneys in order to try to stop our audit. So, like, from the get-go, we had 70 attorneys trying to stop what we're doing. So we had, like, initial lawsuits, and there's all these ridiculous claims, and they're trying to shut us down. And at one point, they filed a motion for a stay to stop the audit. And the judge was actually pretty brilliant. The judge said, hey, if you put up this bond, we'll put a stay on the audit. It has to stop. And if you win your appeal, you get your money back from it, you know, and we'll put the stay in. But if you don't, then that money goes away. And they basically call them the bluff. And what was interesting is that during this lawsuit, they decided not to post the bond because they realized that they had pretty much no case to try to stop us. But unfortunately, this hit the newspaper so much that everybody thought the audit was paused, and like 2/3 of our counters didn't show up the next day. So it negatively impacted us.
Wow.
Let alone, you know, we had politicians that we were dealing with that were involved in the audit in various capacities, doing all the other crazy things, and people trying to get media associated with it. Well, we're trying to solve just the standard operational challenges of doing something that no one had ever done before. And just to give you some perspective, so when we're talking about 2.1 million ballots, and specifically when we're talking about just the aspect of taking pictures of those, high-resolution pictures of those, we end up needing, what was it? It was like 800 or 900 terabytes worth of data just to store the stuff for those videos, let alone the live streaming that we did all the time. So we basically had to set up the network of a large corporation onto a air-gapped system. You know, air-gapped means there's no way to connect to it from the outside, in addition to all the other challenges and craziness we had coming after us. And meanwhile, you guys may or may not have noticed, but even on, quote-unquote, our side, all these people on the right who supported the audit individually were accusing each other of being FBI plants or spies or any number of whatever things. And I spent a lot of my time trying to talk to them and get everyone to get along to support us so that we continue to get things done. In order to make it happen, And so this is kind of the backdrop of just like all the stuff that we can talk about behind why Lyle helped with some of the firefights and some of the stuff and why we were meeting that night. And this isn't even the specific situation we're talking about, but it just gives you an idea of the type of
it's just the kind of stuff that was happening. And, you know, well, okay, so we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I don't want to skip over who Mark Elias is. And the fact he hired 70 lawyers, people don't necessarily follow this stuff all that close. They need to kind of know where that was coming from and what that means. Mm-hmm. So, let's come right back. I found one song that had about computers, huh? Wow. In my 500 and some songs, I found one. You're going to really like it. So this one's for you. It's kind of a Lyle computer song, actually. That's what I was thinking. Oh. Like, if Lyle had a playlist of computer songs, this would be pretty much top of the list.
On this show.
This is just so much fun. Makes my whole day. Bill's shaking his head.
I am not responsible.
Bill has no idea. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so, cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there.
What a good lead into Mark Elias. Do you like your spam song, Lyle?
I just want to thank you all for the hospitality I'm receiving on the show.
It's a special kind of hospitality, only given here.
But you know what? Like all large families, and obviously Doug's the pro here. I'm only the oldest of five kids. I don't know anything about your situation. But bottom line is we only tease people we like. Everyone knows that. The only people who don't know that are only children, and who knows how that works. They never share because they're only children.
Doug, go on with the story about Mark Elias.
Yeah, he's quite a figure.
Yeah, he was just one. Again, Doug, correct me. He was just one sharp point, if you will, in a host. There were political people. There was national people. There was a lot of people on all sides of the aisles doing everything they could to destroy this forensic audit, undercut it, sabotage it in many different ways to prove that there was nothing here. And Doug had to put up with all of that. He doesn't discuss it. I'm hoping in the book he will he'll go a little bit behind the curtain. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because, yes, I was putting out a lot of fires that never the public never saw, but Doug knows this, and so do a couple of the senior people, which we won't mention, but Doug, you know what I'm talking about, in charge of security, in charge of some coordinations and things of that nature. We had to put out a number of political and other fires. The governor of Arizona, for instance, convinced the mayor of Phoenix not to have any security for the forensic audit. They forbid the Arizona police of all levels to be involved.
Nice.
Well, that opened up some serious problems. So I had to put out that fire, and we did. And we had very good security. In fact, it was the security that caught some of the political people taking things and doing things they had no authority to do because they knew nothing about the security arrangements we made. And that's just one little tidbit to a whole host of things. So when we met that night at the IHOP, it was because there were other serious problems. And I spent the day in Phoenix dealing with those. And then I met with Doug at night at 10:30, and we went over him and did a debrief. And he's right. There was during the commercial, we were talking, on another night, I'd forgotten about this, on another night, we went over some more problems and fires. And at the end of that meeting, it was a three-day weekend, I believe, Doug. I forget what it was, but I said, "You're going home. You're going home in the morning. If I have to put your blanket off the plane, I'm doing so, and I'll ride back with you and get you there." "No, I need to be here." "No, I'm bigger than you. I'm older than you. You're going on a plane."
Age and treachery always overcomes youth and skill.
Yeah, but you know something, guys? For 30 seconds, then I'll be quiet and let Doug talk serious stuff. His wife had supported him phenomenally under a lot of national attack in all sorts of ways. And Doug was...
Just to be clear, it wasn't just about national attack, because you have to understand that every single time someone on the left or someone on the right went out and made some crazy statement about me, I received death threats. And not only did I receive death threats, but, like, people showed up at our house. Type of stuff. So, like, it's not just like, "Hey, my husband is being, you know, defamed over the course of the country." It's, "Hey, there's weird people showing up, and when I go get groceries, is that person following me? Because I have to make sure I'm protecting my kids and everyone and what's going on." So it's a whole nother layer.
Well, this wasn't because we kind of skipped. Okay, so I really want people to know Mark Eric Elias. I just pulled up his Wikipedia. So, an American elections lawyer for the Democratic Party, founded Democracy Docket, a website focused on voting rights and election litigation in the U.S. 2020, he left his position as a partner in Perkins Coie to start the Elias Law Group. Well, anybody who deals with environmental problems like we do out here, Perkins is a big name. Elias served as general counsel for the Hillary Clinton 2016 campaign, John Kerry 2004. In 2020 and 2021, on behalf of the Biden campaign and the DNC, he oversaw a state-by-state response to lawsuits. He was hired by Kamala Harris for the 2024 election. So this isn't just some guy who's a Democratic, you know, operative who has a law degree. I mean, this is a big guy coming after you with all the resources that they have.
Yeah, little old me.
Yeah, right. I mean,
Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah, right. Some guy who comes in and goes, "Well, sure, I can help you figure out if your, if your election stuff, you know, was run correctly. I can look at all the computer stuff." And then all of a sudden, Mark Elias falls out of the sky. You're like, "Uh-oh." I don't know. That would concern me.
Yeah, that was a concern. Doug would know more about that than I. All kidding aside,
that's a big deal.
Well, it was. We discussed it, and we were taking steps to counter that. But we had problems within Maricopa County. The Board of Supervisors is totally corrupt. Phoenix, Maricopa County supervisors, they had been subpoenaed a couple of times, and they refused the subpoenas. They finally were subpoenaed by the state Senate to give testimony, or they were going to be held in contempt of the Senate. Now, people don't realize that can happen. And the Senate was going to have them arrested, and I'm not making this up, and the Senate can do that. Now, would that put them in jail, or do they have a jail in the Senate? No. What they would do is they would have the Arizona Department of Public Safety dispatched and take each of the county supervisors, there's five of them, who failed to comply with Senate agreements and subpoenas, etc., and bring them down and hold them all day in the Senate where they could not function, and then at night escort them to their home and stay there, monitor them, and then bring them back down the next day. So that's the form of arrest in a quick and short way. The reason for this is because not only did Doug, but the state of Arizona wanted to take a look at the Dominion machines and other equipment associated with it. And we'd already had verified reports of tampering with machines in a multiplicity of ways. Doug can speak into that because it becomes really technical. But they continued to not comply. And so we had those issues. We had a couple of political people who wanted to make a name for themselves, and they were playing both ends to the middle. Depending on the day of the week and who they were talking to, be it CNN or whomever, they could blow in the wind and either go against the audit, go against Doug, or all of a sudden they're in favor of it. But it was adding to the overall confusion and misinformation being sent out, and that further created problems, which then Mark Elias and others could count on. But see, Doug, as the director of the audit, he was the focal point. So they came after him, and he's right, and I was a little surprised to hear him say it just now, that I didn't think he would talk about it, but the threats against him, against his family to intimidate them, hoping that he would quit. There was a plan to get him to quit, and if he quit or resigned, whatever word you want to use, there was somebody who was going to step in. And that would have been another catastrophe. So Doug's right. This was a heck of a battle behind the curtain that people did not see.
Yeah, and when I was working with some of the security professionals that were thankfully helping me and my family out, I mean, I had to learn things I never thought I'd ever need to know, like the difference between a death threat and a qualified death threat. You know, apparently if someone says, just generically, I'm going to kill you, you really don't need to worry about that. But if they start going, hey, I know the blah, blah, blah school that your kids are in or the XYZ vehicle that you're in, that's when you have to start being concerned. And so over the course of all this work, I probably received, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 death threats. And I received about 3, 4, 5 qualified death threats that had to be looked into even more fully.
Correct, yeah. That's not too stressful. Well, on top of Doug, speak into this because you were there every day, but on top of the political issues that were just rampant, not only in Arizona but nationwide, at one time, throughout the course of the forensic audit, over 26 states sent delegations to Arizona to review the forensic audit, 26 legislative delegations. They didn't all come on the same day, but it was a steady stream. And that's just one more little layer. It would take a half hour here to go layer upon layer upon layer of all the things that were taking place well behind the curtain and far away from the floor count. In other words, on the floor of the Coliseum where we had the table set up and the counting was going on. Well beyond all of that, there was just a whole different world taking place. And Doug, unfortunately, And understandably, being the director of the whole thing, he was the focal point in one form or another. So he was putting up with a hell of a lot of pressure that people don't know, to this day still don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you at that time, the other thing to kind of, that you can't overstate is at that time the whole country had gone crazy. You know, they all thought wearing a piece of cloth over their face was going to keep them safe somehow, and fear was absolutely fear of everything, fear of each other, fear of people. Don't go out. Don't shake hands. Don't all this stuff. And there was a lot of controversy about that. You know, you had some places that were really cracking down, other places that were not. They were all heretics. So. The lines of the camp were drawn. It was hard to find a picture of you, Doug. I went to look for something on the internet because I do like to, on the page for the day, I like to put the picture if I can and get a mask on and all of them. I'm like, it's like the Wild West. What the heck?
there's a little bit of a story behind that. So, like, a lot of people said, hey, you're a conservative. Why are you going to have people at the audit wearing masks? Because we planned from the beginning that to have everyone wear masks the whole time, and there's a number of different reasons for that, and one of which is because such a large percentage of our population at that point in time believed full-heartedly that the masks were useful, they were valuable, and that you didn't honor human life if you didn't wear one.
Right.
And I said from the beginning that, you know, I didn't want to go through this whole audit, have good results, hopefully, and have people discredit it simply because they were like, well, they didn't wear masks. It obviously isn't real. And secondly, and the other thing on all of this is that I was a little bit concerned as we've seen these different times where PTA members have been targeted and other things to the FBI, that I didn't really want them to have a catalog of people who volunteered, and masks give you a form of anonymity, makes it harder for people to recognize you. And so from the very beginning, we decided that we were going to require everyone to wear a mask to be on the floor. And the reason, again, was because we wanted to make sure that, that our results would be believable, and we really wanted to protect people. And that resulted in some heated conversations behind the scenes.
And hysteria.
Speaking of hysteria, we have to take a really quick break
for the news to find out what has happened in the world. Just for 5 minutes, so then we're going to come back and talk about some good stuff with you. We'll be right back with our guest, Doug Logan, and Dr. Lyle Verpacki. You're listening to We the People.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. I'm going to do bad things, you won't see. Doing bad things to you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Kunduz.
Well, Bill, today is November 3rd, 2024. Just got a photo from the local grocery store. I have a coworker who was doing some grocery shopping, and it's wall-to-wall people. She said the last days before Armageddon.
Yeah, it'd be the last time you'll get to buy groceries. Yeah.
So, right back to 2020, the great toilet paper debacle. But you know, I can just say again, I have two cases hidden in the house somewhere. I'm not going to say where, you know, just in case you know where I live. But I've had them in there for years. Bill's like, why do you have so much toilet paper? I'm like, if something ever happened, first thing to go will be the toilet paper. He goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then 2020 happened, and then, what happened?
She was giving toilet paper to the mailman.
I did, too.
Like, what are you doing?
The lady who delivered her mail, she's like, I have to get up at 6 o'clock to go to Target. I have to go find toilet paper. I was like, I can give you toilet paper. I've got toilet paper.
Who knew you could be a hero just by having extra toilet paper?
It took me 20 years to be right, but you know what? My people are Icelanders and Irishmen, so while we're busy screwing around, we're plotting.
And if they don't have it, they'll take it from you.
Well, yeah, there's that. Got a long history there, too. So, now that we've divulged all that personal information, bottom line is, if you're going to the grocery store, you might want to drag your feet because it's going to be hell. All right, Doug, back to all that was your joyous adventure in 2020. So, you know, you guys, before we, in all seriousness here, why?
What?
I know. I'm gonna blow it and put on like a different persona here. No. In all seriousness, why did this come about? Like, Lyle, you were there before Doug was there. So, what was the deal in Arizona? Why did you feel like, what was the clue that you needed a forensic audit? What even set this in motion?
The evidence that was given on November 30th. At the all-day joint legislative hearing, the evidence was very daunting, and we gave it to the Arizona Attorney General. President Trump and others were also notified and given copies. Immediately, the Arizona Attorney General's office said there was problems with chain of custody. I won't get into all the details. And other issues that they did not find it to be credible. Well, that was incredible in and of itself. So what happened then was another hearing was coordinated, which I coordinated down in Oral Valley, just south of Phoenix. And even additional evidence was given. I believe Doug was one of the people that testified as a subject matter specialist in that hearing, joint legislative hearing. And once again, phenomenal evidence, not opinion theory, was compiled. I made darn certain that chain of custody was not in any way questioned, and that was given to the Attorney General. And once again, they played around with it and said there wasn't sufficient evidence here, whatever. As that Attorney General Brnovich was leaving office, he did write a letter saying, you know, there was sufficient evidence to warrant an investigation. Well, thanks a lot. That was, you know, a couple of years too late. So what happened then, almost simultaneously as the evidence was coming forward, Arizona citizens were, as Doug suggested, petitioning and contacting the state legislature. I can tell you that at one time they closed down the phone system, the computer system of the Capitol. That many people were calling in and writing in. It overloaded the system. They did the same thing in Maricopa County. They shut down the system. The volume of citizens petitioning to have an audit was earth-shattering, breathtaking. To shut down state capital systems and Maricopa County government systems was quite a sight to behold. And so that caught the attention of a couple of the leaders, and the evidence that was given to them demonstrated that this was not some sort of sensational, theatrical act, that there were serious repercussions if it turned out to be true, and what was needed was a forensic audit. Again, I may say that additional evidence was presented to Representatives Annie Biggs and Representative Paul Gosar, so they could take it to the floor of the Senate on January 6th. And we all know what happened on January 6th, which was planned. Just as Representative Gosar, as Paul began to speak and present the evidence from Arizona, everything got messed up and they had to evacuate the federal Capitol. Very interesting. Prior to that even, the amount of evidence turned in far exceeded what would be considered reasonable suspicion, and it raised itself to the level of probable cause. And the reason this was happening in the state legislature is because under the Constitution, a state legislature has the authority to certify or not certify an election. What was being asked was, please do not certify this until we get a forensic audit done. We already had evidence that the machines had been compromised. We had evidence that they were broken down, that they were accessed. We had other evidence of ballot stuffing. We had evidence of false ballots coming in. All of that evidence was presented, and there was a hell of a fight between certain leaders in the state of Arizona to not have any of this disclosed. Slowly but painfully, what was learned was there was too much here, and with the citizens of Arizona leading the charge for accountability, hence Doug Logan was then hired to go ahead and do a formal forensic audit.
So when you started this, Doug, did you think this was going to be... Do you have any idea this was going to be the can of worms that it turned into?
No. I mean, I had an idea that it was going to be a big deal and it would be difficult and everything, but I had absolutely no idea how big of a deal it was going to be and how much of an impact it would have, you know, on my company, on me, on my family, all of that. So.
Well, it had a big impact also, Doug, on the nation, on other states.
Yeah, like I said, that's true.
26 states, Aaron, Bill, 26 states, legislative panels or committees, whatever you want to call them, 26.
Yeah, I think it was actually 28 states sent delegations to check and to take a look at, see what we're doing. because they were considering doing something similar in their state, because again, it's what people were asking for. In general, if you take a look at the, you know, stock, if you trade in the stock market, you have to have a financial audit every single year. It doesn't undermine the financial system to regularly audit the financial system. It's, in fact, it's required and it's considered a safeguard. Yet somehow the narrative they were sowing is that by having an audit of the election, it undermines the election, which is totally bogus and makes no sense whatsoever. And so I think it was 28 states sent delegations to check it out. And overwhelmingly, the response from everyone was, wow, we had no idea it was this professional. Everything that we saw and we heard on media was it was some clown show. Like, we had no idea this is what was really happening going on. And they're all absolutely impressed at what we're doing and took that information back to their states.
That's kind of cool. So do you feel like, I mean, it sounds like that would have had an impact on all of those places to improve things.
It certainly should have had an impact. And in some states, I mean, I don't want to say didn't have an impact, because there's all sorts of organizations across the country that were inspired by the audit that spawned up. And I know that I've talked with a number of them who've said so much. And they're starting to find and detect and to notice oddities in the election, because everyone's paying closer attention. One of the great examples is Williamson, Tennessee. So in 2022, they're in one of the elections, in Williamson, Tennessee, one of the poll workers decided that they were going to just put a little X mark on a sheet of paper when on a particular tabulator, just that one tabulator, how many people went to it. And at the end of the night, when they count the number of ballots that went up, they're just going to see, you know, they could have missed one or two, but is it going to be roughly the same? I don't remember what the numbers were at all. I'm just going to throw a number out here. So this is whatever. But let's say that the machine printed out 800. They're like, hey, I have like 1,000. Lo and behold, they dive into it and they discover that the official narrative from Dominion is that one of the ballots was read as a provisional ballot. And for those of you who don't know what a provisional ballot is, a provisional ballot is when you go up and you show up to vote and they say, I'm sorry, you're not on the voter rolls, or I'm sorry, it says you already voted, or any other reason. You can ask for a provisional ballot and you can go fill it out. And effectively, what that gets logged, and they try to clear and validate that you were supposed to be in the voter rolls, but you weren't, or whatever. And if they prove that you are who you say you are, and you were supposed to be there, they then count that ballot. That's what a provisional ballot is. But in any case, what they said is a provisional ballot was registered as provisional. And in all the states that I'm aware of in the United States, you never run provisional ballots through the actual voting system. You hold those aside, and only after they're counted do they get run through. So they're not run on election day. But the machine supposedly read something and said that it was read a provisional ballot, and due to a programming error, every ballot from then on out in the rest of the day, they marked as provisional, even though that it wasn't. And so all these ballots that were supposed to be provisional, as a result, were not counted. Mm. And this only happened because people were paying attention. And people were paying attention because after the 2020 election and the audit, they started to focus in on those sorts of things. But if you take a look, like in general in the political sphere, it was a very, very difficult thing for most politicians to back any motive that or any initiative that did election integrity. If you just look in Pennsylvania, what happened with Doug Mastriano and a few other individuals who did, I mean, they were crucified. They were stripped of their positions and everything. And so there's very, very high stakes for any politician that wants to take on election integrity issues in pretty much every state, even if they think that it's worthwhile.
Yeah, and that's a pretty bad, that's a terrible tack to take, because, again, like you said, any company that you have would do some sort of audit on their processes, procedures, their money, you always do that. I mean, you always do that. So why would we not do that with election?
And another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of these attorneys that took on election cases, they had to fight for their bar license. There were bar complaints against them. And historically, if you're an attorney, you know this, but historically, it's really, really, like, it's really hard for you to lose your bar license for representing someone. they take what is a frivolous case has to be viewed as so unbelievably frivolous to ever be classified as that, and they typically still never penalize the attorney. But literally, for the attorney for bringing forth the case in election integrity matter, they had to fight for the bar license, and in some cases, they lost the bar license. So there are less conservative attorneys to challenge elections now, and any other conservative attorney out there who even thinks about it has to think as to whether this is worth putting their entire livelihood at risk, because if you lose your bar license, you can no longer be an attorney. Almost every attorney I worked with through all of this has had to fight for their bar license. And that is one of the biggest threats to democracy from some of this election stuff as well, is because we've got the three branches of government to balance each other out. But if you have nobody to represent people in the judicial branch, you don't even stand a chance to have fairness within that system.
And why do you think that is? Why attack them for their bar license? I mean, there's a lot of other things going on. Why do you think they're singling out the attorneys?
I mean, it's an intimidation tactic. It's specifically to make sure that they don't ever challenge it again. I mean, if you really dig into it and look into it, I mean, cancel culture has its roots in the way that Chinese communism works, where there's this culture pressure to do things that are right. That's all cancel culture is. And this is just an extension of cancel culture in order to intimidate people from doing the right thing, because they think that their way is more correct.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, that's the real kicker with it, is that if you can silence people and no one can dissent, I mean, then you de facto win.
So
of course the guys like Mark Elias, they didn't have any difficulty with the bar, right?
No, absolutely not.
Because he was on the right side as far as they were concerned. And did this have anything to do with different states? Did you notice any sort of disparity between the states, or was it just across the board?
From what I've seen, it's been pretty much across the board in the United States. You know, just as an example, so over the course of the audit, a lot of people don't know this, but the courts actually determined that my company was subject to public records under Arizona public records law. And without diving into a whole bunch of the details, it's never been applied to a private organization before in this manner. When it's been applied to private organization, it's always been the limited amount by law. And one of the great examples is a police department hired a company to help vet candidates used for interviewing, and they ruled that they were subject to public records. But the only thing they had to do is provide the resumes of the individuals who applied, you know, in order to make sure they weren't doing any bias. They didn't have to say anything about internal communications. They didn't have to show their notes. They didn't have to show the process, whatever. They just had to do that core information. The courts ended up ruling that my company was not only subject to public records, but that everything that even if I thought the word audit, you know, with a text message to my wife, it was potentially subject to public records. And beyond that, even within the scope of public records, if you go and if I submit a public records request to a given agency, the only records they have to turn over are those that are responsive to the specific things that I requested. And the courts actually ended up ruling that not only was I subject to public records, but I had to turn over every single record that could possibly ever be construed as a public record associated with the audit, effectively everything that the audit was in, and I had to go through all that and under a very, very tight timeline. And that's, you know, ultimately all the lawsuits and everything, and the Arizona Senate not paying us for a long time, that's a whole nother story, ended up being what it caused my company to be closed down. And with this public record stuff, I had multiple attorneys that, you know, represented with me and worked with me, and they all told me that in their 30-year law careers, they've never seen court cases that are so overtly biased in the courtroom. I know that may sound crazy. Everyone who's in a lawsuit sits there and says, oh, yes, the world is biased against me. But just to, I'm going to give some of the examples from the court, you know, just give you a little bit more perspective and the stuff that we ran into.
And this is so state court, correct?
Correct. It's a state court.
Okay.
So generally, when you're going through a court, if you ever get held in contempt of court, it needs to be something that you willfully could have done, but you didn't do. So, like, the judge can't tell you that, hey, Doug, I know you can't jump anywhere near the rim of a basketball hoop, but I want you to slam dunk. I'm sorry you didn't slam dunk, Doug. You're in contempt of court. It can't happen. I can't jump that high. I can jump pretty high, but I can't jump that high. On top of that, fines associated with contempt of court are supposed to be coercive, not punitive, which means that they're supposed to be at a amount that will encourage you to do what you're supposed to do or what the courts ask you to do, not to punish you for not doing what the courts ask you to do. So meanwhile, we're in this court case. My company is going bankrupt. I've shut it down. I show up in court, and we have this contempt of court hearing with this judge. And this judge goes on and says, you know, basically, this is the most important case of my entire career.
Wow.
Goes on and on about how his opinion has been of me has been formed by reading the newspaper. The newspaper is the plaintiff in this thing. And like just like when you're on a jury, you're not supposed to read the newspaper about the stuff you're going through. It's only supposed to be court. Judges aren't supposed to do the same. And he's in open court saying all these things. He ends up at the end of it, put in my company Cyber Ninjas, in charge of, in contempt of court, which again, like I did everything I could. I physically couldn't, one person can't go through the hundreds of thousands, actually millions of records in order to process what is good and what's not. Couldn't pay attorneys in order to go through it. The Senate wouldn't help me. Long story goes through. Lyle, I'm actually, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, but I want to say it was $5,000 a day he was penalizing me. Is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so $5,000 a day. Now, just to give an example, when Trump had that New York hearing and they held him in contempt of court, it made national news that they were charging Trump, I think it was, I want to say it was $1,000 a day. So Trump has a little bit more money than I do, okay? Probably just a little bit. But it was national news and that, but I got hit with $5,000 a day.
Meanwhile,
I never did, and we're like...
Yeah. Meanwhile, yeah. you're being crushed at an epic level. And you know, it's kind of interesting, but we followed this along the way because Lyle was coming on periodically giving updates and whatnot. And once this part all started, it became pretty. It kind of fell off the radar a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure, what they intended. I hate to do this to you, but we have to take a quick break again. So let's have everybody let $5,000 a day sink in, and we'll be right back. But you're an all-star, Doug. Thank you so much for what you did. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
And all that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold. It's a cool place.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Possibly.
Well, if you ever need a soundtrack for your book, Doug, I think that's probably a top contender. Wasn't that I didn't know enough?
Sorry.
No, I just was laughing.
If anyone wants to be notified when my book is available, if they go to my first initial DLogan.com, you can subscribe and you will be the first to be notified when my book is released. And I can talk about all these details and other craziness that I'm sure we won't even have time to go into today.
Oh, snazzy. Okay. Well, I will post that. DLogan. Tell me again.
.com.
DLogan.com. That's so easy. It's just deceptively simple, but often confused. Put that on my list. Lyle can't do time, and I can't remember the website. Okay. Oh, my gosh. So they have, you know, plus or minus 20, 25 minutes just to target the information. So they're fining you $5,000 a day. How long did that, just out of curiosity, how long did that go on?
It's hard to say exactly. The long story is I ended up settling the lawsuits at the end of everything, and so it kind of went away. But theoretically, the way the wording of it was, when I started to comply, it would potentially go away. And I eventually did have an attorney that volunteered to work pro bono for me, who was able to process the records that finally enabled me to turn things over, and we started to turn over records. But I basically worked full-time on that for 6 months, going through everything myself, giving over to the attorney. Said, because I needed to cut down what went to him because he couldn't handle everything. So I had to get all the other company records, which I had a legal obligation with my other customers, and like all these records are mingled with my other customers to not reveal them in the public records. With it had nothing to do with the audit. So we were actually able to do that. But to go back to this simply, so when you're in a course of law and you have a biased judge, the way that you have to deal with that is you can file a motion to recuse the judge because of bias. And we actually filed that, and my attorneys actually filed bar complaints for the egregious stuff that this judge actually did. And the way that it's supposed to work in a system that's functional and working is that there's a panel who reviews that. They rule on it. They rule that bias was definitely the case. And just so you know, the bar is any appearance of bias. It doesn't actually have to be actual bias. It just has to be enough to that it looks like it might be there. So it's not a very high bar. And once they rule on it, they assign a new judge. And that new judge, because the last judge was recused, is supposed to revisit all of the decisions from the prior judge in order to determine whether there were things or bias that need to be changed. Because otherwise, if it's not changed, the nature of a court case is that the decisions of the judge basically become the law of the case. It doesn't necessarily apply everywhere, but it becomes the law of the case. So we file this motion to recuse. The day they're supposed to rule on it, they decide to do a procedural option, and they combine the case with another public records case that was also against us in the Senate. And in doing so, they make the argument moot. But what that means is that the judge is gone, so it no longer matters anymore. But the new judge is brought in. But since they never ruled on the motion to recuse, that new judge does not have to revisit any of the prior decisions. They're just law in the case. And in fact, the new judge has to operate as if those are law in the case. To condense the story even further, that judge in our first open hearing got really, really mad at me, red in the neck, and starts screaming at me over the course of the judge stuff, and starts saying that he was conspiring and working with the other judge to make sure that I paid the price or something along those lines in it, which, again, he's not supposed to be working with other judges to corrupt people. We filed another motion to recuse. Again, this judge should have been recused. The day they were supposed to rule on it, they did a procedural change and did a judge rotation where a judge ruled rotated in. Again, taking that judge off, making all the things that he had ruled in there. And one little detail in here that's kind of a big deal is in that time period in the rulings is that the other side had filed a motion for my wife and I to be personally added to the case. And if you know anything, that's called piercing the corporate veil. I operated as a corporation. Mm-hmm. I did everything correctly. Piercing the corporate veil is really hard to do in any state, and it's even harder to do in Arizona. But just matter of the fact it was done, and that meant that at the end of the day, when they they basically said I was responsible for all the attorney fees for all the other side and everything. It meant my wife and I were personally liable for it, not just Cyber Ninjas Corp, you know, Cyber Ninjas Inc. that was now out of business. And again, this new judge who seemed reasonable, he seemed like a fair, reasonable judge, the final judge we got, but he was held to basically the law of the case of the prior two very biased judges.
Wow. And is that still ongoing, or is that how it was left?
That was how it was left. We turned over all the records. We finally, the Senate settled with one of the parties in the lawsuit. And then we finally settled, I think, what was it, 2 months ago? We finally settled and got that actually answered. Fortunately or unfortunately, my dad passed away a little over a year ago and left me a very small inheritance. It was enough to settle and get the case gone and over with. Would have much rather used that on other things, but
yeah,
you know,
with 12 kids and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a crime.
Effectively, it was $100,000. So
that is there are many, many examples throughout history of people doing the right thing and being crushed for it, but I have to say, I think most people would. I mean, why would you go after somebody who was working on election integrity? That almost makes no sense, unless it's kind of the same reason, people ask all the time, well, why don't we have voter ID in every state? Well, why indeed? You know?
I mean, in my case, you've got to make people afraid to challenge it. I mean, the more I poked at the election system, it's an antiquated system that's poorly defined. And even forget any fraud or any intentional anything, the margin of error is larger than the margin of victory right now, let alone with any shenanigans. And that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, in the beginning of the show, Aaron, you made a comment so profound about getting out to vote. It doesn't matter if it's for school boards, city councils, all the way up. What we, Doug hasn't been a part of this, but on another show, and I would encourage that maybe another show could come about, we have learned, again, fact-based, not theory, not opinion, fact-based that certain socialist groups have spent phenomenal amounts of monies and time and energy organizing to put people in to all the local, from library boards to school boards all the way up. That way they can impact the local elections and communities, counties, and move them away from a constitutional-based authority like Doug's hinting at here. You've got bars, lawyers, other critical parts of the political constitutional infrastructure that has been compromised. And we can prove that. And that's not just sensational. We have taken, I'm using the word we, there's a couple of other individuals who've done far more than I have on this, and that may be another show that we can discuss. That information has gone to President Trump, General Flynn, and several others. Along with a couple of attorney generals in different states, where there have been extensive briefings presented with absolute fact, much like you're in a court, and the evidence has been extremely overwhelming to the point where grand juries are prepared to be called. When that happens, there's going to be a domino effect. That's one of the things President Trump's been talking about. If and when he gets into office, there's going to be a reckoning because many, many areas of our nation have been compromised. And so what Doug's been putting up with, and that was really the most noticeable when we had the forensic audit, was he came up against this very wall of liberal socialists, I'm being redundant to a degree, but socialist parties and individuals that were dedicated to do everything they could to take him out, undo the audit, and to show that this whole thing was a sham.
so nothing would come of it. What they're petrified of is what happened having this audit and then having changes occur in our electoral process. Now they're petrified even more that Trump could get back in, and he knows what we've been discussing here and so much more, that he is going to take steps to rectify this. And I don't mean just in theory. He's got a game plan in place, ready to go on January 20th at 12:31, right after he takes the oath of office. And they know this. And that would be subpoenas and arrests and removal from office of a number of people. We're talking in the hundreds.
Well, he does get to replace thousands of people on the first day.
Oh, yeah,
just
every president does. And I think that's one thing they're going to lose sight of is, you know, the first person he takes out, they're going to scream bloody murder. But that's his decision, and every president's
decision. Hopefully these
decision.
Are up and above and beyond those folks, too.
Well, yeah, but they all get the opportunity to hire who they want to work with, and he's no different.
No, that'll make him a monster, though,
yep.
Of course.
I want to throw one other thing out there.
Okay,
I mean,
hold that thought, though, because I want to run that consistent thought right up to the top of the hour. We'll take our last break. We're here with Doug Logan and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sorrow in the distance, I'm gonna trust and cast my fears aside. My life's a work that I know you'll finish. I know I'm gonna be alright. It's you I'll chase, even when I can't see your face. No matter how many skies fall down, I'm covered under the peace I've found. You're my shelter.
So, in a plea to all of our Christian listeners, traditionally, you guys stay home and don't vote. There's some funny misperception that God votes for you, but actually, he's not a registered voter. You are. So, God doesn't drive parked cars, and he doesn't cast ballots. So, please go and take care of that on Tuesday. Just in case you're confused about that, we thought we'd clear that up. All right, back to Doug Logan.
So, yeah, just to go on that, I mean, you need to show up and vote because God, you know, God created the world and he created us in manners that we're supposed to create with him. And part of that is taking charge of our government to do it in a way that honors him. And that kind of leads into, you know, what I was going to talk about. In addition to going and voting, we need to pray.
You know, absolutely.
2 Chronicles 7:14 says, you know, it says that we should, if my people, you know, and that's, you know, if you're Judeo-Christian, you're my people, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. And like we seem to think that it's like other people in the nation that need to do things, and it's not. You know, he's calling the people, and I don't know, the interesting fact, I don't know if you know this, but like the United States Constitution is actually one of the most copied documents to set up a nation that's ever existed. But it's actually failed so many times because its functionality is requires that people believe that God exists, and that they are seeking to serve that higher power and that God. And that's why it's worked in Judeo-Christian cultures, and it has failed in almost every other culture that's out there. So it's really important that we as a nation are praying for our leaders, and are praying and really confessing our own sins and turning away from them, so that He'll hear us and heal our land.
Yep. You have to show up. So for all the people that are sitting there thinking, well, I'm going to wait till Tuesday to see how things look, if you seriously are believing any of these guys who are giving you polls and all that stuff, think again. Think again. And cautionary tale from California. So many. I won't go into all of them. But honestly, we finally qualified a recall on Gavin Newsom the second time they ran that. And against all odds, the signatures qualified. Yeah, they had enough signatures for it, a lot more than they needed. And it showed up on the ballot, and almost a million Republicans did not vote. And I had people call who said, well, they cheated. And I'm like, just out of curiosity, did you vote? Well, no, because I knew they were going to cheat. I'm like, well, why would they cheat when they convinced you not to vote?
They didn't need to cheat.
Like, that's really much simpler. Yeah. Convince you to stay home.
It's going to be a lot more difficult if you make them cheat.
Yeah, I figure we ought to make it as hard as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard it said that if you don't vote, you lose the right to complain about anyone who's in office. I mean, I think that's
absolutely
true. You know, you have a responsibility. If you don't show up, if you don't do your part, if you don't step forth to do that simple act, that amazing liberty that we've been given in this nation, I don't complain by what you get, because it's other people's values that are being used to choose who's going to rule this nation.
Well, the other part of that too is that, you know, people are really, really focused on the presidential election, which I completely understand. The thing that unfortunately sometimes gets lost in the shuffle is you have all these down ballot races, and the House and the Senate, every member of the House is up for re-election every 2 years. So you have all your House members and your Senate members, both of those are very close. So let's just say everybody runs in, they vote for Trump supporters, they run and they vote for Trump, and it's like, I don't know who these other guys are and I don't care. Bottom line is, he can't get anything done without the House and the Senate. So all of these things work together, and they all count.
Absolutely.
The end. All right, the end of my rant. Back to you, Doug. I've spent too much time at the campaign headquarters answering questions, going, what? What? Why are you saying that?
And I kind of want to say on that note, you know, I've been in the center of a lot of this stuff. I've seen a lot of things, and there's a lot of things that are really, really out of whack. But all indications I have is that there are votes that are being counted that should not be counted and aren't real. But there is not the entire vote being controlled one way or another across the entire election. So, you know, you might as well make it harder for them. You know, you show up and vote, show what you believe in, and you'll make it harder for them, even if that's there. And we can't be discouraged. We can't be discouraged in any of this stuff. We have to keep doing and fighting for what's right with everything that's within our control and capability to do, while we still can.
That's a big message coming from you, since the system has not been kind to you, and yet you've chosen not to walk away from it.
Yeah, this has been one of the most painful, difficult seasons of my life and trials and go through it. And with that said, I have people who ask me, would you change it? I mean, there's small details I would change, but without a doubt, I would go forth. I wouldn't do the audit again. I did the right thing for the right reasons. I wanted to serve my country. I wanted to serve my God. Somebody needed to do it. It was going to do it with integrity. I feel like I was called to do it, and that God opened up doors to make it happen. But if I'm going to go through all these sacrifices and you can't get out of your bed to show up to cast the ballot? What's the point? I mean, come on. I did my part. Now you do your part and show up.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Everybody has to work on that. And, you know, the one thing we haven't discussed is that with Maricopa County, this all happened at the local level. I mean, you had people at the local level who were part of the problem, or who were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we all go and elect county clerks, and most people have no idea who those folks are or what they do. I think through your trials and tribulations in Arizona, people became pretty focused, like, well, wait a minute, who is in charge of the voter rolls? What does the Secretary of State in my state actually do? And what have they been doing? And what is my county clerk doing? What kind of processes do we have?
Well, see, I think that's one good thing that came out of all of this
too.
Is people all of a sudden started paying attention to what their elected representatives were responsible for.
Yep.
And started voting on those parts. But I think that's some of the most important votes you can cast is your local elections. That's where you can really affect change. Is in your local elections.
Hey, Doug, from a voter integrity standpoint, who's got the heavier hand, the folks at the local level or like the state? I mean, it's kind of a bad broad question, but
I mean, in general, most of the elections are fully run within the actual county. And it's actually interesting. As you go through the ballot, if you, like, the first entry on it has the most number of votes, and as you go down it, like, down the ballot, the last item on it has almost no votes. It's drastically less because people don't get that far. And what you find is beyond the first page, a lot of those races can be won or lost by 10, 20, 50 votes. I know it's really easy to go, okay, there's 2.1 million people and Maricopa County or wherever you are, therefore my one vote really doesn't matter. But when you get down to these votes that gets down to 10 or 20, you got to realize it's real. And those things are determining what your kids are being taught. Those votes are determining who your district attorney is and who's going to be held accountable for their crimes and who's not. So find out who the right candidates are and vote for them.
Can they cheat an election if the county... If you have a county clerk's office that is processing the ballots and they just do an impeccable job and there are no errors and they turn in exactly no mistakes whatsoever, can that election be, of course everything can be possible, but what's the likelihood that things get crooked after that?
You know, there's so many ways the system can be compromised, and there's so many ways there can be human error. I mean, let's just take a really stupid example. So you have a bunch of people working on an election. Those individuals are not the highest skilled individuals. Those are individuals, even if they're skilled, are not highly trained. And so what's the impact on the election if one person takes a stack of 500 ballots and they somehow get run 3 times?
Right.
Right.
I mean, that's going to change every down ballot for sure. For those that are filled out, their stuff is amplified. I mean, it's that simple. And let alone if there's one person and all that mayhem that goes on election data, because you have all this data that has to be collected on a single day, and that's hard to do. They're temp workers, most of them. And they're not properly trained. So if you know what you're doing, how easy is it for you to do that on purpose? So that's beyond the local election. I mean, there's literally, you know, there's stories people tell of people going and collecting mail-in ballots, and paying people $50 for the ballot to get it filled out. So like, if that was the case, they paid people $50 or $100 or whatever it was for the ballot that was filled out and went in, the actual county could do everything perfectly and it still could be off.
Sure.
And it still could be significant depending on how it's going. Not to mention, there's this whole thing called UACAVA. Have you ever heard of UACAVA?
Uh-uh.
The UACAVA is Uniformed Overseas, I forget exactly what it is, but it's supposed to be...
Oh, sure, you asked me and tripped me up, and then you don't know.
Yeah. By federal law, it's like Swiss cheese, okay? That law needs to be reformed. It's like Swiss cheese. Effectively, in order to make it so that a military can vote. And I'm not against our military voting by any stretch. They need to vote in it. But they make it so they can send in their votes via postcard, via email, via fax, via, like, all these other crazy methods that obviously the voting machines can't handle, which means a person then has to translate that and has to make sure it's only translated once. And one of the interesting things we saw in Maricopa County is even though a lot of the overseas people and the number of military personnel who were casting votes was drastically decreased, you had, I want to say, and this is just memory, and this has been like 4 years, you had like 30,000 votes in Maricopa County, which was more than enough to throw the election, that were cast by overseas people, most of which not military, and predominantly the Uecava votes were all for the Democratic Party and not for the Republican Party, which again does not historically match the demographics of what we know of the military. And
It's
not we.
Sounds like something bad happened. Well, you know, we only have a minute left anyway. So, before we panic here.
Yeah, I didn't like what you were saying anyway.
The gods were not with us. It was just like, thanks, Doug. Thanks, Lyle. Bye. They apparently got cut off at the pass. But I hope you can learn some stuff today. It's an interesting place. I think we'll have Doug on again, especially after he releases his book, because that whole thing, I don't know if you followed very much of it, but there's a tremendous amount on the website. So if you go on to wethepeopleradio.us, I have a tab that says Government and National Security. And has a little plus sign. If you click on that, Dr. Lyle Rapacki has a tab on there because there were too many shows. And a bunch of them are about that audit and what was going on in real time. We did the shows along the way, so not 4 years later, but at the time. And really, it was a really interesting process. But get out and vote. No, it's okay. Keep going. Because there ain't no rest for the wicked, and we all know that. Thank you for listening. You've been tuned in to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
For the wicked, until we close our eyes for good.